Jeff. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert. You can find his books at your favorite book retailer and also totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Business Report and the Iowa Politics Report comes to us from his home radio station, KXEL in Cedar Falls, Waterloo, Iowa. Hi, Jeff. How are we today?
Well, I can speak for myself, but I'm all right. Hopefully you are the same to constitute the we. Or is this just because now it's, you know, a global radio show? You know, the we is, you know, you're just... a plural.
We're broadcasting in beautiful Madison, Wisconsin, over right. In Waukesha and Milwaukee area. Good to be over there. Of course, Minneapolis, St. Paul. It's a growing thing, like a mold, like a fungus. You know, it's you need to spray that down, stop the itching.
Something that you need ointment for.
Yeah,
sure.
Exactly. Speaking of that. Donald Trump, sorry, you put the ball in the tee, I'm going to swing.
You know, for you folks in Minnesota and Wisconsin, certainly Wisconsin, I do this. I just lay it out there for him, and he takes a swing. That's how we do it.
All right. There is some breaking news here. I'll get to that in a second. But your thoughts, I mean, he is starting to get in trouble. The walls are closing in. The Department of Justice has come on out and said, no, that they have and it sounds like it's probably a good bet. The Department of Justice has actually been doing an investigation into whether they should charge him and building a case against him for a while now. And so the walls are starting to close in. I mean, you know, you've got Meadows and multiple other people who are clearly in a lot of legal trouble as well. Bannon's in big legal trouble at this point. You know, there's a lot of people that speculate and say, well, one way for him to try to get out of this is to run for president. So do you think there is, you know, do you think he's going to run again in 2024? Or do you think that's a lot of bluster just to try to stay relevant? And the reality is he knows that, that's just not something on his agenda.
I go back and forth on this personally, because to me, I think he wants to be the kingmaker. He wants to be able to be the aggrieved party, because what does he have to lose? A lot, right?
Yeah.
If he loses the 24 election, then he's a two-time loser. His claims about you can go on about his marriages with the two-time loser.
I tried to date in the 20s, too. So I was 20 years old. So it's like, oh, would you like to go out? Okay, no, I'll go sit back over here.
You walked up to the table at the disco with five young ladies. Would anyone like to dance? And they all suddenly
No, not at all.
If he runs in 24 and loses, okay, first of all, if he runs in 24, he will get the nomination. If he runs and loses the general election, then all the claims about 2020, instead of being vindicated, they all go away like it was all sour grapes. So he could go along as the martyr and then be the kingmaker and say, I'm anointing my successor, and it's Ron DeSantis. That, I still think, is the smarter play. But, you know, he gets out there in these places, and it doesn't matter if it's Arizona or Alaska or Illinois or wherever, he has adoring crowds, and that's the oxygen that he needs. And so while I still think there's a better chance than not, it's more likely he will not run than he will run. I tell you, he just acts like somebody who's itching after the Republicans take both the House and Senate, his playbook, that is, to announce that he's running for president and try to coast along on their momentum. You could see that happening in mid-November.
There's two different elements I want to address from what you just said. Now, first of all, the point about Trump trying to be a kingmaker, the problem that he's having is he's not having the success he thought he was going to have. I mean, in Georgia and Arizona, there are the people he was working really hard against, and they did not win. Doesn't mean that there aren't some. The Pennsylvania governor candidate, the guy out in Maryland. I mean, there are some that he has endorsed that have come back to win. Clearly, he has, just within Republican voters, appeal, but it does seem like it is waning. And as the further we get away from this, and the more the January 6th committee exposes, is it seems like he's starting to fall more on the side of, you know, close but no cigar versus winning a tight race. And I'm wondering, you know, he clearly doesn't want to comment on any race that his candidate endorsed candidate doesn't win. But it's got to be there, the fact that there's been a lot of people he's endorsed and have not won.
Well, this one's tough because the vast majority of endorsements he's made, those people have won. However, in how many of those races did he jump in and endorse a front runner so late in the race that it made no impact, right? Now, if he gets in on Michigan, and what's the other one that's coming up that's very, very tight? Because he did endorse in Arizona. I think there's another one. But the idea is if he
Wisconsin.
Okay, so if he does nothing on those races, then you know it's a matter of, I just want to keep my my record. I don't care about who wins. I just want my record to be maintained. If he actually does enter into one of those, you know, that's going to be the key point. Will that be the tipping point and the key factor? I would dare say in Pennsylvania, in the Senate race, it was. And now you got to, you know, with apologies to those who will be offended by this, you got to find a milk carton to see a picture of Dr. Oz. He's nowhere in the campaign. I have no idea. Did he think he's already won? You know, so again,
well, and by the way, if you and I can talk just how political campaigns go, you and I have talked about this before. You win your primary. That's where you're talking to the loyal base. Now it's time for you to shed all that partisanship and get out into places where you generally wouldn't go, you know, shake babies, kiss hands, that sort of thing, and get out there and try to say, hey, I'm not really that. Here's my more moderate views. That is the strategy. It's not just Oz, it's the guy in Ohio too. It's almost like they've realized they won, and now it's like, well, I'm not going to change being this far right person. I'll just go hide in a bunker. It really is remarkable, because usually there's a big campaign kickoff. They go on out in the road. They start heading into toss-up districts. You don't see a lot of Republicans doing that right now.
I'm glad you mentioned Ohio, because I neglected that one. In Pennsylvania, Oz has, first of all, name recognition, right?
Yep.
So it's Oz against the incumbent lieutenant governor, who's won statewide office, won races for statewide office. He had health issues, and so Oz kind of supposedly stayed back a bit. Well, that dog's long since hunted, okay? In Ohio, you've got J.D. Vance against Congressman Tim Ryan, who knows a few things about running elections. He's outpacing Vance in the fundraising. He's all over television. He's setting the narrative for the U.S. Senate campaign in Ohio. And I don't know, is it vacation time for the Vance family? It's just staggering. And so to the broader point about the Trump endorsement, you know, that may still carry weight in primaries, and I dare say it has more so than not. Let's check that Arizona Senate race. Let's check that Arizona governor's race when they have those primaries to see if it matters. But that's not going to win you a general election, and you've got to bring in the independents. You got to bring in the moderates, and if you're content to sit back and say Trump's in my corner, that's only going to get you a third of the potential population. It's going to turn off another third.
Oh, yeah.
So why are you doing nothing for the middle?
It is interesting, and because as you go back in the implications of this on its own, on Trump and his endorsements, he becomes the easy scapegoat. If the House and Senate stay in the Democrats' hands, he becomes the easy scapegoat. I mean, and that along with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, which I still think is going to have some major repercussions coming in November. But because there are a lot of Republicans. I know a lot of Republicans who are like, charge him with the crime, get him out of the way, don't let him run. They're terrified of him announcing this fall because, once again, that even this is a midterm election, it becomes another Trump election. They already know that he's toxic in a lot of places. You know, it would become to a point for the mainstream Republicans, it would be almost a good idea. Let that happen. They all fail. And then they can easily just, you know, sweep him to the side. Let, you know, Merrick Garland go after him and then move on and, anoint DeSantis.
Well, the first thing is the worst thing for Republicans running for office this year is for Trump to announce for president before the midterm. He wants to.
Yes.
But I think
if he's going to,
he's been talked out of it. And the smart money says he's been talked out of it to just let this play out, because the Democrats are already trying to make this a Trump election in a lot of ways, especially in some of the primaries that you've seen, where Democrats are putting money behind the Trump candidate, hoping that person will get the nomination, as being the farthest to the right, because then they're easier to pick off in the general election, right? So this is a Trump election. And I don't doubt, I doubt that you know any Republicans. Okay, but put that aside.
Oh,
if in
please.
Fact you the neighbor across the street doesn't count, it's gotta be more than, you know, a second cousin.
I know a few.
Very few. But in any case, it is true. There is a large, I would say, cohort of Republicans who think Trump was the answer in 2016. They liked the policies. They still like the policies. They don't like the baggage. And I'll tell you, though, Matt, if Trump, and this won't happen, but if he never mentioned 2020 again in any of these campaign appearances or interviews, 2020 didn't happen. If he just moves on, I think he would stand a much better chance of winning election in 2024. He refuses to let 2020 go. I get it. I don't know what it would be like to be in his position. And I think he truly feels he won. Okay, that's fine. But, you know, the idea of moving forward, you hear a lot of Republicans say, we need to move forward. That does not automatically mean without Trump, but it does mean 2020, we cannot continually go back over and plow this same ground. It's not going to work for voters who are sitting and saying, look at inflation, look at supply chain. What are you going to do for me in the future?
By the way, I think Trump won? I'll say it this way. The best liars convince themselves the lie is the truth. And he knew he was, you know, speaking out of his caboose when he started this. But I think, like a good liar, he convinced himself of that being the truth. And I'm not going to disagree necessarily with this. Here's a little bit of breaking news for you on this one. The Republican National Committee has now paid $2 million to law firms representing Trump. But now they're warning if the former president that if he runs for president in 2024, they will stop paying his legal bills. That's now, you know, they're taking a party's neutral policy. Now, when, I guess on one side of it, the RNC might want him to do this because, I mean, if they're spending that much money on his legal bills, that's not money they can spend on candidates they can try to get elected. But at the same time, that actually is, I think, from the RNC. Now, that is the first time I've seen the RNC ever really stand up to Trump and say, you know, this is the damage you will do if you do this. I mean, clearly the RNC feels as if Trump announces, it will be a disaster for the Republican Party.
Well, we've talked before about some of these political parties at various times just can't get out of their own way.
Yep.
And what's the one way that the Republicans can screw up what appears to be laid out for them? And that's one way, is to have Trump announce and say, you get me my Congress now, and then I'll come back in 2 years, thereby automatically making every Republican on the ballot sign on to Trump by definition. That's the way that you screw this thing up. Trump and the RNC have a very odd relationship. They have, you know, Trump issued cease and desist orders or letters. He can't issue an order against the RNC when they were doing fundraising in his name. The RNC raised a whole bunch of money to supposedly help challenge the 2020 election, then didn't spend any of it. You know, so there, it's a prickly relationship at best. It was one thing for the RNC, Matt, in 2020 to say, well, that's fine. You couple of guys who are running against Trump, we support the incumbent. We're not neutral. We support the incumbent. In 2024, he may have been president, but he's not the incumbent. And that's a distinction they can make. And it would probably be wise for them to make it and just let the people decide, the voters in primaries and caucuses decide.
The problem is that there's, as you mentioned, there's a lot of places where that guy still goes and he's wildly popular. I mean, it's, you're right. I mean, the best thing he'd do is just, you know, move off to the side and let DeSantis take over. That might help the Republican Party, but that is just not who that dude is. I'll tell you what. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the Griner offer from the Biden administration, as well as also I want to get into the, I think we're starting to see a change in the Ukraine-Russian war, in the sense being that it seems like this is going to be the new normal. Any idea that this is going to stop, it seems that's going away. Jeff Stein joining us once again, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. It's the Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. A knife and a live and Devil Radio, 92.7 FM in Madison, WTTN 1580 AM in Columbus, WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM, the Shaw in Waukesha, Milwaukee, and right here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota in Minneapolis, St. Paul. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us right now. And Jeff, it's, you know, I think we all can agree that the Russians, just the way that they were, you know, when they went out there and grabbed Brittany Griner, the WNBA star, and held her and made this mock trial, that this was just a, it was a political maneuver. We have apparently have put forward the option to get Griner plus another American in exchange for a Russian arms dealer, Victor Bout, that the U.S. is currently holding. I think it's my guess is going to be, I mean, I just don't know where Russia thinks they're going to go with this. I think it's a real quick way for Russia to get on the wrong side of even like India and China, who have been fairly tolerant of the Russians right now, if all of a sudden they're imprisoning American citizens just to imprison them. And I think because the United States, let's face it, has a lot more ability to control economic issues than the rest of these countries still, regardless of inflation and economic any economic issues. Your thoughts on this, because I got to believe the Russians at this point are probably trying to find some way out of this themselves.
Well, they are. But the one thing that we have to remember is that the Russian system of law and justice is not the same as in this country. And I think a lot of people have sympathy or empathy for Ms. Griner. But the fact of the matter is she had a substance on her person that was illegal. And there's no, you know, here's my doctor's note that says I need it for medicinal purposes. That's not going to cut over there, you know. So in which case, yes, would the Russians like to save face? But by the same token, they're getting a good amount of publicity at home, and it's diverting the home front from the atrocities that the citizens are suffering in Russia due to the how badly the Ukraine situation is going. And that is going to go on. There's no quick resolution of that. I'd almost say that the Russians could have looked the other way with Brittany Griner, but instead they saw it as a good opportunity, as a diversion, and paint Americans in a negative light.
Well, and from what I've understood is there's, you know, basketball players and players like that have gone overseas, yes, and back to Russia before, and they've had these products and they've never really batted an eye. But because of this current situation, it drove that. I should mention Paul Whelan is the other American that would be part of that trade deal with them. That one issue aside, and I think my gut feeling is the Russians are going to take that. I think they'll take it and they'll, you know, kind of walk away from it and they'll act like they got a victory because they got their guy back.
Right. And it's not uncommon. We do these. We always say we don't do them and then we do them. Yeah. The thing that the Biden administration had to be careful about, and I think they are, is to not just go get a pro basketball player because of high visibility, but to also come away with someone like Mr. Whelan, whose family has been lobbying for help for a very long time. And so that's the way the administration saves face, if they can make it about more than just one American.
It seems as if Europe itself is kind of settling in for this new reality that the oil, the natural gas from Russia, if it's not completely gone, will be before too long, will be completely gone. The thing that's interesting is that most of Europe seems to be okay with that. That they seem to have, they're seeming to accept the fact that we just need to move in a different direction, which for Russia is a bad deal. Don't get me wrong. I think it's going to be tough for Europe for a few years, but eventually when they get up their solar and their wind power and they find other, the United States and Canada for natural gas options there. I think that it's, you know, this is, I think the rest of Europe basically, this is a big, the heck with you to Russia. we're done with you. And this case, it's not going to be a case where they're eventually going to be able to just agree to this land goes to Russia, this stays with Ukraine, and we're done. I think that that chance for that is over, that this is basically a new Cold War.
There's no question it's going to be hot in Ukraine and cold for the rest of us, and with the hope that it doesn't become an active hot war. The trick with Europe is the same thing we talk about in this country in terms of converting to other energy sources. You can't do it on a dime. You can't snap your fingers and all of a sudden these other forms are there. There has to be a transitional period, and you almost are forced into it. And that's the thing with Europe. They could have tried to be more independent or have backups in case Russia was a bad actor. But they just assumed, well, Russia's making enough money off of this, they'll always be there. Well, again, different motivations, right? And, you know, we have to think like the Russians in this case. And so the Europeans should not be surprised that their energy sources are now limited and may be gone forever. And it is going to be a tough couple of years until they can get it all figured out.
The Russians were dealt a bit of a blow today. A key bridge in Kherson was blown up by the Ukrainians. This was a bridge the Russians needed to resupply their troops. Basically, the Ukrainians have put them into a position where they say, okay, you either have to withdraw or we're going to annihilate you. On top of that, there's two other towns near this town that the Ukrainians have retaken again. Once again, we have to give credit to the Ukrainians. This was a military that was not expected to hold up as they done. And now here we are months later, and they're taking back ground. They're putting Russia into really difficult positions. And I was looking at they've destroyed 222 Russian planes. That's pricey. That's just planes. It's like 4,000 tanks and armored vehicles have been destroyed. You know, 30,000 Russian troops have been killed. The Ukrainians are holding their own, and it is, as much as Russia is going to try to act like this isn't affecting them, their economy is definitely is starting to be crumbling for years.
It is, and as long as Putin can keep his loyal lieutenants around him, he's fine. I had a guest on my program, the new Putin biographer. He worked for the Times of London and the BBC, and he Skyped in from France, and he'd be interesting for you to talk to. But basically, sure. You know, he's saying Putin doesn't care, because it's all about Putin. And so he knew that the economy was going to go south. He knew the people were going to suffer, and he doesn't care because he's got these loyal lieutenants that he allows to get rich in exchange for loyalty. And there's no sign of that cracking anytime soon. Therefore, the war is going to just keep going on.
Well, and the thing with Russia and the history of Russia is that when things do change, they change very quickly. You know, and that's the way it is. When on all these changes is when it was the old Soviet Empire to Yeltsin, and you know what happened in the 1990s. When it does change, it changes, and then it's more reactionary. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time thinking you could get someone worse than Putin, but that's always the fear: is that if Putin goes to the side, what comes in after him?
Well, absolutely, and again, there's no heir apparent. Because if you have an heir apparent, then you've designated someone who can topple you. And so, again, it's all about Putin, because otherwise you'd have a succession plan. There's no succession plan, and his health, despite what may be wishful thinking, seems pretty good.
Well, it is very, it's very the Sith Lord Star Wars thing, Palpatine having Darth Vader on the side. On second thought, I don't want you by me. I'm just going to stay by myself. It really, you are right. He has done a very good job of turning himself into the only person in charge of that country.
And again, he's got the people loyal to him, and he takes care of them, they'll take care of him. No change seen.
Jeff Stein, the Iowa Politics Report. I will get that posted out here a little bit later on as well. We'll spotlight this interview as well. Jeff, we'll actually talk to you again in 2 weeks. Okay, my friend?
Have a good one, Matthew. Thanks much.
Madison, Waukesha, Milwaukee, you're going with Devil Radio. Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hour 2. That's up next.